Mary Kay Cabot covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and she is joining us here on the Revel Wireless Hotline. Mary Kay, first, your overall thoughts on what the Browns did during this draft.
Well, first of all, with the first-round pick, Barkevious Mingo, you know, they set out to get a pass rusher. You and I have talked about that on the show before, and they went and got their pass rusher. Now, I'm sure they also liked Deion Jordan. Maybe they even liked Ziggy Ansah. Those two guys were unavailable. They went with the next best pass rusher, and some folks even had him ranked ahead of Deion Jordan, from what I was able to tell. So, you know, I think they did the right thing, as we had talked about before. I don't think either of us really felt that the cornerback in that situation was the right pick that high. You know, you really want to affect and disrupt the quarterback. So I liked what they did there. Then they came back. Obviously, you know, you have to consider Josh Gordon to be part of this. So Josh Gordon in the second round, you know, we all know he's got a year under his belt already and should make a big step up. Third round, you know, Leon McFadden, from everything I've heard and the people that I've talked to since the draft, they expect that he should be able to come in here and challenge for a starting job. You know, he's got good ball skills. He's got great instincts. You know, he covers well. You know, so I do think that, you know, they filled a need with that pick. And then the rest of it, you know, I know some people have a problem with trading away the fourth and fifth round picks. I don't have a problem with that because I can kind of look at the big picture here and see that, you know, if they don't love the way things work out with their quarterback situation this year, they have put themselves in a position to be able to package some picks and move up if they have to take a quarterback next year.
Now, that's a great perspective because it does give you that ammunition to do different things. And I don't think you're right. I've heard the same reaction that a lot of people have had. Oh, gosh, why didn't they just pick players? This is a team that only won 5 games last year. They have to have need for players and bodies to go in there. But I think that's really taking a very short view of what the situation's all about. I think that, number one, what kind of players do you actually get in the fourth and fifth round? It doesn't mean that they're invaluable picks. They are, but I think from the standpoint of what you pointed out, to back yourself up and give yourself an opportunity to do even more in 2014, when you know as a group making the decisions here, you're going to have a 2014 draft to deal with. Had this maybe been the previous group in charge and reaching a third year or, you know, whatever it might be in your time with the team, and you're still still dealing with a losing record, then your philosophy is probably different. You're a little more desperate to do things. I think they can afford to be patient here.
Well, not only that, when you look to last year, and like you said, how many fourth and fifth rounders actually, not only do they sometimes not make the team, but how often do they actually become starters? When you look to last year and what Tom Hecker did, they used a fourth and fifth round pick as currency to move up to take a Trent Richardson, which, you know, nobody had a problem with that. I think people were very, very excited when they let those fourth and fifth round picks go. So it's the same kind of thing, but you don't see the result of it for a whole nother year. And not only did they use the fourth and fifth round picks as currency, they parlayed them into a third and fourth round pick. So, I mean, you really will be able to use these as, you know, great value, I think, when it comes time to take a look at these, you know, 5 or 6 really good quarterbacks that should be coming out next year.
And I think the other element that ties in with the two picks that they made, their first two picks, and how they can impact this team, I think coaching is a big part of this. I think with Barkevious Mingo, not only is it Ray Horton and his defense and what he can do to school Mingo in his own way to get him as effective as possible in this 3-4 aggressive pass rushing scheme, but it's also about having a guy like Brian Baker there who knows how to take someone with that body type, that basketball sort of frame, and maximize what he can do. At 237, he's a little bit light, I would say, but it looks like he could add more weight comfortably, more muscle, and become even more effective. But initially, Mary Kay, we're not looking to see this guy stop the run. I mean, what you want him for is to get the pressure on Joe Flacco and get the pressure on Ben Roethlisberger and force mistakes or turnovers or sacks.
Absolutely. And, you know, so you don't want to minimize that effectiveness by asking him to put on a bunch of weight and do what he, you know, doesn't do extremely well. I mean, I think when you factor in that you've also got, you know, Jabal Sheard to work with. You've got Barkevius Mingo. You've got Paul Kruger. You have people, not just them, but a lot of guys now that can get to the passer. So he doesn't necessarily have to fulfill every role that you want him to. You know, who knows if he'll be an every down linebacker right away. You would hope that he would become that. But when you do look at his frame, I think you can see that he does look like he has the capability to bulk up a little bit in the event they need him to or when they need him to. And not just Brian Baker, but, you know, Joe Cullen is excellent at working with young pass rushers. He has a tremendous history and knack for doing that. So, like you said, I think they really will coach him up. And then you look at, you know, some other guys that have come out without a huge amount of production in their final year in college, the Alden Smiths and the Clay Matthews of the world, and they come in and it's lights out.
Mary Kay Cabot covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. She's joining us on the Revel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Mary Kay, to talk about Leon McFadden, a lot of the conversation goes to, first, the lack of height. Ideally, you'd want somebody taller than 5'9 and change, and that's the first knock I think that people see. Again, likely the reason why he's available to the Browns or any team in the third round. But the more research I've done on him, the more I'm liking what I'm hearing. And one of the things I heard, Gil Brandt, the highly respected former NFL personnel man for the Cowboys, of course, he's with NFL.com and SiriusXM NFL Radio and just all things NFL, told me that in his pre-draft rating, he had a second-round grade on McFadden. So I think it's encouraging to hear that. And the other thing, and I heard this from another source in the league who told me that McFadden, I don't have the exact number, but McFadden had an outstanding Wunderlich grade. So intelligence would be an important part probably of this conversation. When you think about the complexity of Ray Horton's defense, you want the guy who is smart enough and quick enough to understand, I mean, mentally quick to grasp and comprehend, because you're going to ask a corner to do a lot of things in this defense, most of which are not favorable to the cornerback position with all the blitzing and attacking of the quarterback.
Well, that is true. And the other thing that you have to like about Leon McFadden is the fact that he has played a lot of football. You know, you want somebody that has a lot of production under his belt and behind him, and he has that, and it's been good production. You know, he can tackle, he can cover, he can do all of those kinds of things. He's got good ball skills, and I think the opportunity will be there for him to get his hands on some footballs because, I mean, you know, with Joe Hayden on the other side, they're going to have to throw the ball, you know, somewhere. And, you know, so I think this gives them, you know, two good potential shutdown corners. And the other good news, of course, for Joe and Leon is when you are rushing the passer, the way this team is going to rush the passer, make no mistake, they will do it. It's going to completely help them on the back end. So, you know, he's going to have an opportunity to, you know, to come into a team that has that, and cornerbacks absolutely, of course, love that.
An interesting pick would be the sixth rounder. And again, when you get to rounds in six and seven, you're sort of seeing what might stick generally. That's the rule of thumb. And again, I don't think that the Browns were just trying to do this as a throwaway. But Jamoris Slaughter from Notre Dame, interesting because he's coming off an injured Achilles tendon, and it's the kind of serious injury for athletes, for anybody. It takes such a long recovery, and then what do you have when you come back from it? Now, he has sounded encouraged about being ready to play and participate, I should say, by the start of training camp late July, which would be a nice timetable. And I know the Browns trusted, talking with Mike Lombardi yesterday on the show, trust Joe Sheehan and the medical staff, what they said about this guy, that he could recover well from this. If that's the case, you know the need of safety is there. It'd be interesting to think that the Browns could find significant help at that position if that's what Slaughter is in the sixth round.
Well, like you said, it's a roll of the dice. Once you get to the sixth and seventh round, you can take some chances on guys like this. And this is one of those situations where if it pays off and he can get healthy, from people that I've talked to, a lot of people had a third-round grade on him. I had people that had a fourth-round grade on him. So this is what they were thinking if he had not ruptured the Achilles. So he's got a lot of potential. You know, he's got good speed. He's also another one that was very productive, you know, before this. And you know, again, you never know. I mean, we've seen guys come through here and not be, you know, 100%. But I think one of the good things is that he did it so early in the year last year. I mean, it's not like, I mean, there's guys that were drafted that were tearing their Achilles in, like, the last game of the season or the second last game of the season. This happened early enough on in the season that he should have a chance to be ready to go by the time the season starts. And, again, when you're talking about a sixth-round pick, if they have to kind of redshirt him a little bit this year and give him one more year, then it wouldn't be the end of the world.
And when you talk about this draft, too, you have to talk about two receivers, one, of course, being Josh Gordon, the second rounder effectively in this year's draft that was drafted in last year's supplemental draft. And the other one is Devon Bess, who comes via the trade that the Browns made with the Dolphins during this draft. So I look at both of those guys. We know what Gordon is or where he is as a Brown coming into year two, and the likelihood that he's made some will make some real progress because he has an off season to work with, and we know what kind of athletic potential he has. Bess comes in as looks like filling the slot hole that this team genuinely had and didn't know what it would do with, but now it has the player with some experience. And there's the other thing. He's that veteran guy that there's been this clamor for. They've got to get a veteran guy to be part of this receiving group. Devon Bess looks like he's prepared to handle whatever leadership role comes with that.
Yeah, you know, we got an opportunity to talk to Devon Bess on a conference call yesterday. I was very, very impressed with everything that I heard. Then I went back and did a little bit more research on his background and delved into the story a little bit about what happened to him when he was 17 years old out in Oakland, California. Got himself into a little bit of trouble with letting some guys hop into his car that had some stolen goods. He spent 15 months in a rehabilitation center, and that completely changed his life. Made him hungry, made him turn things around, made him even want to stay out of trouble way more than ever before, even though he really wasn't a troublesome youngster. But, you know, I was very, very impressed with it, and it was just a neat story how he played football while he was in this facility, and someone filmed him, sent the film out to June Jones in Hawaii. They took a chance on him. He was incredibly productive out there. Then gets that chance with Miami. But throughout that, he decided to establish the Best Route Foundation, and he now is great at just helping underprivileged kids stay out of trouble. I think he's a perfect, perfect mentor for guys like Josh Gordon and Greg Little. They came in here with, you know, with a little bit of baggage and maybe not knowing exactly what it takes to reach a championship level. You've got Travis Benjamin. I think he can use some guidance. So I think he'll be a tremendous mentor for these guys. He's been in the league for 5 years. You know, he's had tremendous production. I mean, the fewest catches that he's had ever in a season were, you know, he's never had fewer than 50 in a season or fewer than, like, 537 yards. So he knows what it takes, and I think that's a great pickup for the Browns.
Mary Kay, you touched on this earlier, the draft capital that the Browns have accumulated with the trades they made with the fourth and fifth rounders to Pittsburgh and Indy to get those upgraded picks in 2014 for the potential of packaging something if indeed they want to pursue a quarterback then. They didn't pursue a quarterback in this draft. There was a lot of speculation that might happen somewhere along the line. Do you think the fact that they didn't kind of puts to rest the notion that Brandon Whedon is really going to have any major challenge? I mean, Jason Campbell effectively is here to provide competition, but we saw Brandon had the first team reps through the offseason. He's number one in the depth chart in the offseason. Are we at a place where this is basically now going to be his job to lose?
You know what, that's what it seems like to me at this point. But I think the Browns have been very careful to leave the door open that if some, you know, that if something else came along, if another opportunity arose, that they're open to anything. But right now, for all intents and purposes, I think they're trying to say, Brandon's the guy, we're moving forward with him, we're going to see how this goes, you know, he needs to step it up. One thing that I've found throughout this whole entire offseason, no matter where I've gone, whether it's been to the NFL Combine, whether it's been to the NFL owners meetings, or anywhere else this offseason, everyone that I've talked to that knows North Turner has said the same thing to me. They have said he really likes Brandon Whedon. He genuinely likes him, is excited about him, and can't wait to get to work with him and see what he can do with that big arm. We saw what Rob Chudzinski was able to do in this similar type of offense with a Derek Anderson. And I just think that Norv likes Brandon, and that's going to help him.
Mary Kay, great stuff as always, and we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Vic.
All right. She is Mary Kay Cabot covering the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer with us on the Revel Wireless Hotline. More is coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.